now. Hello, welcome to 2 Hour Podcast. I'm Keith Rocket, and with me is, last time he was known as the Pixar guy, but I don't know, do you want to be known as Pixar guy again, or is there another name?
How about film guy?
Film guy? All right, you're the film guy now.
I don't know. It's all silly and fun. Yeah,
definitely. So after Pixar, you know, how was it, like, what was your next job, or what was the next thing you were doing, and how was that, you know, the environment there?
Well, one of the reasons I left Pixar was that it was basically 24/7, which was great, but you had no, that, you know, you were just recovering from your workday. So I went back to the place I was before. It was a video editing kind of company, and they were happy to have me back. And they said, if you come back to us, we'll pay you any rate you want, and you can have any shift you want.
Oh, like, nice.
Like, really? Like
that's really nice.
That didn't last.
Oh.
Because they always are changing managers, you know, managers always get fired. But I came back. It's kind of a little bit of celebrity coming back to regular video production, post-production. And I did that for another, like, 5 or 6 years or something. And it's just a fun group of people I worked with, you know, editing and duplication and making things for broadcast. I was able to work 8 till 5, so I could actually leave at 5 o'clock and go, you know, take a karate class or a photography class. You know, I had my life back, so that's kind of why I switched.
Yeah, it wasn't much of how you explain in Pixar, where it's like after you're done working, hey, let's hang out, and it's like I'm still at work in some way, right?
Completely. Yeah. Let's go to the movies. Like, oh my God, you guys, like, I'll see you 8 in the morning, you know, always a party. And it's like a Pixar party, which sounds great, but it's like so insular. You're like, it's almost like, yeah, you're in a cult where, and that was, like I said, it was great, but, it was nice to get my freedom back. And then I started, you know, shooting a 16 millimeter film. I was so excited to start my own projects.
Okay.
And that's when we were shooting film. Yeah. So,
that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
And so how was the production behind that, you know, at the job you went back to, how was the production behind that? Was there any good stories behind there, or it was just, you're just bland, just, you know, just 9 to 5 job and just, you know,
well, I'm trying to remember when these things happened. If it came before Pixar or after Pixar, but I know they were shooting the film The Net.
Okay.
In San Francisco. Was it like 93 or 95? I think it was before Pixar, but it's a good post story where the composer of the movie The Net came in one day, like on a Saturday, just knocked on the door. Mm-hmm. I unlocked it. He brought it. He goes, hey, I need to sync this temp soundtrack to this footage they gave me. Can you help me do that? And I go, of course. Mm-hmm. And so I sunk it up. You know, a couple edits, really simple. And he was so excited. He's like, I can't wait to show the director, who's the guy who produced, oh, what's his name? Oh, my God. He produced Rocky and Raging Bull and went into directing. And I'm blanking on his name right now. And he came in the following day with his entourage. But the music, composer, like, hugged me and said, hey, if you ever come to LA, I'll take you out to dinner. Thank you so much for syncing the material. It was like a little exaggerated. But what's his name? Not Henry Winkler. I'm gonna look it up. The next day, the entourage came in to look at the footage with the raw soundtrack, and you know, they were pleased. So that was probably one of the bigger highlights of, you know, the post production place, because rarely do you get film people. That, it's more corporate video and commercials, but
Yeah, no worries.
Here we go. Oh, 1995. So it was before Pixar, and it was directed by Erwin Winkler. And now he's 93, but he, you know, who wasn't a well-known person, because he was primarily a producer, and who knows who producers are.
Yeah.
The Net did very well. And this guy did tons of stuff. Like I say, he produced Raging Bull and The Godfather. Oh, yeah. So when he came in, I said, I'm a huge fan of you. And he looked over his shoulder like I was going to kill him. Like he was totally terrified of me, like being, you know, knowing who he was. This is kind of before the internet. So he was a little unnerved. And I had a friend who worked on the film. He did Todd Marks, who I don't know if we talked about before, who I knew from junior college. He did all the computer when they showed the net was showing the way the future was supposed to be or was going to be, where you could, you know, order a pizza. Did you ever see the movie, The Net?
No, I have not. But that's on my list to watch.
Yeah, so for me too. I've only seen clips. But I believe what my friend did was you'd see Sandra Bullock ordering a pizza. And so you'd see her dragging over pepperonis or olives on it. That's the way they imagined the future would be, you know, so specific. And I guess it's kind of a murder mystery movie. But yeah, they're in town shooting, you know, everyone comes to San Francisco to shoot, and, briefly Erling Winkler and who was the composer of that film? Cause he was very, dramatic, the composer, super nice guy. And, I asked him, do you have a business card? I'm like, hey, I'm a big composer. Mark Isham. Mark Isham is a famous composer who happened to walk into our place of all places.
Okay.
And that was, you know, it's kind of, and also they shot the Hulk right outside our building.
Oh, they did?
They did.
Wow. And this was, where was this? This company was in San Francisco, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it was called Fast Forward, and it got bought 3 or 4 times.
Okay.
I think now it's called Extreme Reach. It was called The Point. Oh, it had all these different names. Uh-huh. Because they had tons of machines, and it was a big, you know, pretty big space, big office space. Could do shipping and dubbing and editing and stuff, but still kind of, you know, at the bottom, you know, you could walk off this, you know, potentially come in off the street and work in the shipping department or, you know, start duplicating tapes. And so you got all sorts of different levels. And some people went on from there to go work for Lucasfilm or Pixar or Coppola, the few places you could go. And yeah, the people, they got good people could come, you know, they had a huge flow of people coming through this place. And some are still at Pixar. This woman named Cynthia, who was a production, she worked in just a shipping manager, super smart, super efficient, and she became the manager of our machine room. And she is at Pixar. Maybe she's been there 15 years now, and she's in charge of all of the foreign titles. So if the film is shown in Israel or China or somewhere, she has to make sure that all the, you know, the graphics fit those countries. And she's like super detail oriented and really smart. And she's been there forever. Sorry to talk about Pixar again, but she was one of those people who came in, you know, humble position, but was very smart. And I'm sure she'll retire from Pixar. She's just one of those super competent people.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's good. Yeah. Do you want to share the story about you and, I guess, the manager at Extreme Reach? I guess it's called now, but how during times you had to pretty much. Yeah. I mean.
when I was staying there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was fast forward. And then I think it became Extreme, and they moved down the block, which was strange. They moved to another facility, like less than a half mile away for some reason, down on Sansom Street. So, I remember I was in debt at the time, and, I was living with my uncle in the East Bay, and I just, it was like, I had like $5,000 on my credit card, and I couldn't, even though I was living pretty much rent free, I couldn't just pay my bills. I just could not pay that $5,000 off. I don't know what I was doing wrong. I wasn't really living very luxuriously, very fancy. And so I said to myself, I'm just going to live at the office and all my paycheck will go to squash this debt. So so I started to sleep at the office and see if I could get away with it. And I did. No one really cared or no one knew about it. And I actually slept in the vault with all the film and video elements in a beanbag chair they had in the corner somewhere. I think the first weekend, I remember it was midnight and I'm walking around at the closed facility and I hear someone washing dishes. I'm like,
what?
Yeah. Who could be here now? And I looked over and it was the general manager. And I'm like, uh-oh,
Did you get caught?
Probably. I did not get caught because, you know, I kind of went back in the vault and kind of hid.
went back into the vault.
I did, which is so, just realize if you have video or elements, there could be some person like me sleeping in there next to your hard drives or your film prints.
Yeah, I mean.
Which is weird. So there became a cat and mouse game where I would get up sometimes, like at 5 in the morning, and I would see the legs of my manager sticking out of his office because we were both secretly hiding, sleeping in the office. And then I'd go to 24-hour fitness and work out or use a shower and come back to work at 9. And so it was you know, my mom thought it was hilarious. She, when I told her, she goes, you know, she just thought it was so funny that we were both there and both trying to avoid each other.
Yeah, because, you know, it can be like a little short film or something where you're just looking at one, like, you know, sneaking around, not trying to be caught, and another person's also sneaking and not trying to be caught. So you have this, you know, these two worlds where it's like they're not trying to collide.
And he was making, he was like the, he was the president or the manager of the, making lots of money. Yeah. I think he's having situation at home. It was for some reason, I just thought it was hilarious. You know, I mean, it wasn't like scary. It was just awkward. It was just kind of like, dude, really? We're both living in the office. And I think I did that for like a year and I paid off my debt. Mm-hmm. And, that was fun to finally do that. But it was the only way I could do it. You know, sometimes you get in debt and you're like, how can I pay this down? And I had to keep, you know, I kept making payments, and it wasn't really going away. So I had to use my full paycheck every month to pay that down. So yeah, that was, did you hear about people, you know, in corporate America who would do this? There was some other guy who was sleeping in the office at night, who started at the bottom and kind of made his way up. So it's not an uncommon thing, but no. I always wonder, I go, could I do that?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Could I just sleep in a beanbag, like, and with a little, like, little blankie? Could I, like, who would want to? How could you do that? And yeah. And I did. So.
Yeah, because I know at a certain point, like, I know overall you're not supposed to do that because there's a reason. I think there's a law or something. Like, you can't spend the night at your business or something like that. You have to have a. Like that place has to be, what's the word? I guess I'm not like suited for a house for someone to live there because, you know,
right. There's business, liability, I guess, if you died there or something, or if there's a fire and you got burnt up, like, why was he there? Who was aware?
Like, it's not, the business is not made for a home. It's specifically, you know, just for business and
you're not supposed to do that. I mean, maybe and the thing is, we would it was funny working at that company because depending on how well we're doing, like, 1 year they rented a boat and they were doing very well and all the staff got to be on a boat for Christmas or holiday party. Yeah, it was awesome. But the next year we all had sandwiches from Specialties. So, you know, because the thing is about that company, that we were all analog and it was slowly going to digital, but we weren't quite into the internet or fully digital. And so we all had plenty of, you know, there's so many decks, every format, you know, VHS to D2 and all the, we had all the formats, such an investment in money. And I'd always say to our production manager, I said, you know, all this is going to go away at some point. Because you always say that to me. I'm not trying to be negative, but I know you just feel like the future is going to come. I don't know why I would be saying that. But yeah, literally today, everything we did could be done on a computer, you know, either audio. Yeah. I guess an example would be this. We would get 4 Toyota spots on a digital beta cam, and we'd make copies, and we'd do the subtitling and maybe change the offer, you know, the small little writing to make it whatever year. And that was our bread and butter. We'd have to do it really quickly, and then we'd make copies. And eventually we started sending out, we would encode it. And once the encoding started, that was kind of, you know, the writing on the wall that all the stuff is just going to be, you know, transferred or files. And that company, so that was Yeah, it's all gone. I mean, that company is tiny. It's all digital advertising now, and there's no more decks and no more tapes.
Wow. But
I was kind of working at the last, you know, the last time where there would be things put in, you know, envelopes and sent to tape stations. And it's all just filed. I mean, it seems so obvious now, but a few years ago, there were lots of machines and there's shipping and labeling and clients coming in, and
yeah,
that period is gone.
Yeah, definitely. Do you, I know this is a brace for this question, but do you ever think things could come back? I mean, like more of just the retro, you know, how people, you know, they're like for example, how the Walkman was kind of coming back or something, you know, like.
Yes, no, definitely. So we talked about Bill Kendrick last time, who worked, I met him at Fast Forward. And, you know, this is so long ago. He's been at Pixar for 20 years. He's left Pixar. He's in Paris now. But his son, who was in his early 20s, like we were back then, is shooting 16 millimeter, loves film, you know, and did a couple GoFundMes. And I think his daughter did the artwork for it, and another son did the soundtrack. And also Kodak just came out with a Super 8 camera. Have you seen that?
No, I don't think I have.
Yeah, after talking about it for 5 years or whatever, Kodak has a camera where you put in Super 8 cartridges. But I think there's a video component. There's some type of encoding as well. But it's like $5,000. So the retro thing is trying to make a comeback. But if it's not done cheaply, or, you know, it's kind of doomed to failure. And there, I've read some bad reviews just because of the price. But you can buy a Super 8 camera probably for $100 online.
You said it's a Super
8. Just go out and shoot your stuff. Rather than, so there's that film, that video film battle still, where people want either you shoot video and use filters to simulate film, or you try to go back to shoot. You can still buy 35 millimeter film. You can buy 70 millimeter film, on Amazon.
Yeah.
And super, it's super expensive. It's like $600 a roll or something. So it's not, it's cost prohibitive to do, but it, it exists still, and you could probably get a great deal on cameras, but just that sheer economic reality of, you could either spend, I don't know, $50,000 or whatever, versus spending $1,000, you know, to get your film made. And who has that money just to shoot on film when you can kind of simulate the look, you know, enough, I guess.
Yeah, because I know I saw something online where they were doing a comparison of film and digital, and I said, well, it's like about to be like right next to it. Like, I see the difference, but it's like the slight different, like it's like say you have two pictures of black, you know, a black screen, and then you just light one a little, just a tab up, and then you're like, there is a difference. But like, you're not going to really tell if you just see that one side. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but.
Yeah. No, it's a very subtle difference. And I think a lot of it, though, is the frame rate, you know, where it's that 24 look where it's kind of a soft blending of frames and the cadence of film that we associate with movies and a little bit of magic. And if you do too high of a frame rate, which I guess I did in The Hobbit, it's just too clear. It looks like a soap opera or a video, and where you can see the makeup lines, like you need a little bit of a mesh or something between you know, you need something to soften it. And some of these things are so clean that if the frame rate is a certain way, it just comes off looking artificial. So it's a battle between, you know, the high tech and then making things look aesthetically pleasing. And I think David Fincher has been shooting video for like 10 years, and I can't tell because he has the film aesthetic, and, you know, he knows where to drive it. So I think if you know your mediums, you can shoot, and I can't tell what the hell they're doing anymore. But I know that Paul Thomas Anderson shoots film, and Quentin Tarantino likes film, and a couple other people. Yeah. But I think people like Fincher, or maybe most people directing, they're all shooting digital and they'll simulate a certain film stock in general. So people still like that look.
Yeah.
Kind of undefinable kind of dream, slight dream frame thing. And but it's changing also. It's almost every 3 months there's a new camera.
Yeah, there's always. Know, shoots.
Yeah, it's just, it's insane. This rush. So yeah, these cameras are getting so cinematic, these DSLRs. And I'm not sure everyone's trying to make a movie. But I think people who buy still cameras have the fantasy that they want to make a movie, even if they never do. But that's a selling thing. And that combined with AI, where you can change your backgrounds and add effects, it's a cuckoo crazy time out there right now. You know?
Yeah, it's a lot. And with AI advancing and getting more, you know, I mean, they're using AI for a lot of stuff, not just, you know, we're just looking at it as like an art, you know, view, you know, standpoint, but you know, they're using AI for other stuff. There's a lot, just a lot.
It's baked into Photoshop and I think Premiere. And I think also, what do I have on my desktop? I have, what's it called? I'm not awake. Is DaVinci Resolve, where they're going to be using the AI to extract, you know, make the backgrounds out of focus. To say one thing. So, one thing I'll say as a branch off, if you see any video of UFO or Bigfoot or whatever, almost anyone can do that now and do it really well.
Yeah.
Those tools are so powerful about making things like you see, there's a certain person who does this stuff where you're walking at night and you turn a corner and there's a flashlight and you see some type of combination of a giraffe, bear, or something. I don't know if you've seen any of these things. Yeah. So people are so good at creating these uncanny alternate realities that it's really hard to tell what's real, you know, what was captured real, what isn't real, which is fun for the creative people. But if you're an average person, if you think it's real, or I guess the word real is just very, if it's an image, the word reality is becoming very questionable, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And it's pretty much at a point like when like they'll make all these effects and stuff and make it look like reality, you know, if something really happens and it's like, oh, you know, it's like it's getting people used to like, you know, fantasy and all this stuff out there, you know, because as much as they blend in and stuff like that, when, you know, in the real world, that doesn't happen.
Right. And but the tool sets are so powerful now. And then, you know, simulating and mixing. And before, I don't know if you remember this, remember to extract a person.
Yeah.
And make a mat was a big deal. I know that I knew a person from Fast Forward who went on to ILM, and they had a whole step. You had to learn these things, like how to do dirt and scratch removal from the print, and then you'd do compositing, or no, mats before compositing, where you draw out the person's hair to mat them. And now on the iPhone, or probably any phone, almost technology is everywhere.
You could just boop right there on your phone.
And that used to be a person who had to have a skill set to know how to go around the hair. I'm not saying these new ones are perfect, but they're like, you know, 99% or 98%. So these tools, everyone's going to have, which is great, but it comes down to, you know, still writing and how you use them. But more than ever, because I always heard this, you know, you could hear Coppola saying, well, anyone with a phone now can make a movie. And before, that sounds kind of, you know, a little bullshitty, but in reality, it really, really is here. But you still need some good acting. You know?
Yeah.
You need a script. You need someone has to write something compelling.
Even though the AI script is kind of there. I mean, the progress of, you know, I know you use this too. You know, you just type in, write me a script about space. And then all of a sudden it's just right out there. And they're like, wow. That's not good, but you did it. You did an assignment.
You can tell your AI to write a script about you know, a dog and a cat on the moon. I've done it, and it writes like a 3-page script. You can say change the names, and change the names, and add the third character, and it is phenomenal to get you started. But it can't finish it. But it's insane. The tools are just out of control, and they're racing. You know, they're not slowing down. They're exponentially getting more powerful. Yeah, so, so I think, I don't know if we talked about this last time, or you and I talked about this, where I had this, you know, weird fantasy, and someone said it, where you could imagine I Love Lucy or Happy Days or any show with new characters in it, and you couldn't tell a difference. So I think that the technology seems like it's going to a point where you can combine things. It can grab stuff and recombine them, but that's not necessarily new. I mean, it's new because it's new to you, but it's still taking stuff that exists and combining it. But that's not new content. It's, I don't know, but is that considered new? You know, if we make Jaws with the cast of Happy Days, I mean, I think that's something technically we can do, but is that good or bad? I don't know, you know?
Yeah, it still wouldn't be new, but it would be new to, I guess, the standpoint of this new idea or this new blend and stuff, but it won't be new because you'll know the difference. I mean, someone who's older will like, hey, I know those two, but how do they do that?
No, exactly. And it can mess with the history, like in your brain. Because some people have used AI to create, if Star Wars was made in 1920, and it just tickles you enough where it looks like, you know, I think I had someone at work, I don't know if he was saying this, saying to me, oh, I saw, no, they actually made Star Trek like in the 50s or 40s or something. I go, no, it's whatever, late 60s.
Yeah.
And he said, but people were recreating these things and they look just close enough that it confuses it. And people are doing that on purpose because it's fun to do. So it's not new, but they're kind of distorting the past, which is, I don't know, kind of troublesome, you know.
They're rewriting the past. Yeah, it's a lot. It's because you'll see when I was looking at AI pictures and stuff, it was pretty much like, I don't know what it was, but it was maybe it was Star Wars, but it was like in an 80s fantasy, like dark fantasy. And I was seeing it and I was like, it's interesting. And I wouldn't mind seeing a movie like that. But, you know, that's not Star Wars.
Yeah, definitely. So it's. You look at it, you're like, oh, if David Lynch made Star Wars, or if Wes Anderson made Star Wars, and then they can do trailers, they can do, I don't think they can pull off a feature. I don't think so. But, or it's odd. It's just something about it that just is nostalgic. And it's kind of, we'll see though, if people ever beyond kind of experimenting, but who knows? It's hard to predict the future.
I know one thing is AI has trouble with, but you know, all it takes is more, you know, adapting and or fixing and coding is like with fingers.
Oh yeah. Yes. Yeah. Whenever I played with it. Yeah. If I type in, say, an exotic woman on the beach and she has her hand under her neck and her finger, she has like 12 fingers or something. Yeah. So there's definitely some details that are missing and strange. But also when you read about it, it just goes out, these things, these programs go out and grab and snatch everything on the internet.
Yeah.
So that's kind of creepy. And I know they're trying to change that or license stuff, but it's a bizarre future we're looking at.
It's going to be difficult because it has to grab the source from the internet. That's the source it has to grab from. Without that, then the AI won't be able to generate stuff or certain things. So it needs that reference of actual, you know, people, you know, art or drawing and stuff, and then start taking bits by bits and mixing it all together. So that's another issue. That's what's going on. And I feel like it's going to raise another issue, because I'm pretty sure there's gonna be an artist that's saying, hey, that's my, you know, how I draw and stuff.
Oh, definitely. You know. Yeah. Well, on a non-AI question. Remember, not remember, but Avatar.
Yes.
Had the floating rocks
yes.
on the planet. And that guy, there was an artist who drew that in the 60s or 70s, and it got on album covers. And then when you see the poster for Avatar, it's like, it wasn't AI. It was some artist, you know, who took it. Uh-huh. And I think he sued. I'm not sure what the situation was, because it's interesting, because if you're an art director, you know, you're going to, and you're talking to the director or producer, you're saying, well, what do you want it to look like? And you'll get these reference books.
Yeah.
And what's the line between using reference and like stealing someone's concept completely?
Yeah.
And that is tricky, because you definitely, if you're going to make a play or make a movie, you do have to get your reference of costumes and sets and different looks. And exactly. At what point are you referencing and then not just appropriating it? So that's tricky.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it comes to the line of, are you it? Cause you know, you can be you, the gray area is like, well, I was inspired, so I made this and stuff. Then just actually just, you know, taking and like, oh, I'm gonna take this idea and put it here. Blah, right here.
Right. Like we talked about the Terminator with James Cameron, where they're interviewing him the late '70s, early '80s, I guess early '80s. And they go, and he goes, oh, I just stole a couple of Harlan Ellison stories. And he said that in an interview for like Fangoria or some, you know, sci-fi magazine.
Yeah.
And I think filmmakers aren't necessarily writers or readers. You know, we're all about visuals and stuff.
Yeah.
And so he meant to innocently like, oh, I'll just, you know, grab some material out there. And Harlan Ellison heard about it. And he's like, I don't think so. And, you know, did we talk about this before? And where he has to reference now Harlan Ellison on the Terminators, like that he stole couple ideas, and you could argue if he did or didn't, but he shouldn't have said it, you know, like in an interview. Yeah. He should say he was inspired. And Harlan Ellison said, all you had to do was contact me and just say, I would love to use these stories from the Twilight Zone, not Twilight Zone, from Outer Limits, wherever they're from, whatever reference, but like just reference those or ask permission. That's all artists want to be, is not acknowledged.
Yeah.
There could be money involved. I don't know that side of it, but you can't just steal something and then brag about it and not suffer the consequences, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Definitely. Well, let's go back to, you know, Bill, was it Bill Kendry?
Mm-hmm. Bill Kinder.
Yeah. Bill Kinder. And pretty much let's talk about what was the movie? I know the movie I saw there, because I actually got to meet Bill Kinder, and it was great meeting him and stuff, but it's like the whole thing of like to meet him was to go through and watch the whole what's the film, was it Spirited Away? Yeah, Spirited Away. And I just want to say this. I don't know your experience or your, you know, because I know you went to the, did you see the same thing, Spirit Aware? Did you see another
movie? I did. And he sat right next to me. Yep.
I don't know what it is, but I remember watching Spirit Away, and I think I watched, I don't know if it was this year or last year, or maybe 2 years ago, but within that time frame, because I borrowed the DVD Spirit Away to watch it. But I was so engaged in that movie so much the first time I watched it, where I was like, that was a good movie. All right. And then when I saw it here at that Berkeley, I was surprised by how packed it was. Like, it was fully packed. So many people were there. Sold out. But watching the film when it like first opened up, I was like, this is going to be a long movie, because I still remember everything.
Me too.
It's like one of those things, like, you know how you watch a movie, you're like, okay, I know this is gonna happen, so okay, all right, oh, I forgot that happened. So I don't know why, but the first time I watched it, I really like was like literally like downloading, where when I watched it the second time, I was like, this is gonna be long. And like, I knew where the halfway mark was, where like I think at a certain point, I wanted to get up and leave, because I was like, I already know what's happening. I already know, like the one with the dragon with the paper, and they were cutting the dragon. I was like, we're halfway through the movie. There's still more to go.
Yeah, many manifestations. I thought it was an amazing film, but it was. I hate to say this, but I feel like it was just too long.
It is.
And we're in a museum setting, so I'm like sitting at attention. And Bill's the host, so I am, you know, yeah. I would never make jokes. I was with my roommate, and I would never turn to her and talk to her in a movie. I don't do that. But I definitely was going to do it with Bill sitting there because he just gave the presentation, and everyone's very serious.
Yeah.
Watch a movie in that museum reverence is tough. And the film, I think, could have been 90 minutes. I think it's over 2 hours.
Yeah, it's long. It's long because I've seen everything and I was surprised that I remembered everything because I thought I would forget and be like, oh, I forgot about something. No, I was like, I know what happens after this, after that, after that. Yeah, the parents turned into pig, which means we still got 2 more hours to go.
Yeah.
And like once it got to where it's like, okay, now pick the pig or who's your parents and stuff, I was like, huh, made it to the finish line.
Well, was that one of the fault? Wasn't it like 3 endings to it?
Yeah, I think so. It was
because the dragon said, "I'm not a dragon. I'm really a spirit of the river or the pond, the rock." You know, it's like whatever you are. Let's see some credits. Let's wrap it up.
But there are
things that I liked. I did like about the film brought a teenager or a person who was becoming a teenager. Oh, she's 14 or 12.
She's some age.
When you get your first job, that's how I was. I felt like, I mean, if you got your job in kind of a spirit world, fantasy world, but there was a lot of things I remember getting my first job and seeing older people working, younger. So there's a lot of fantastic stuff, great stuff.
The movie's good. The movie's great.
But for the love of God,
it was just too long.
The demand on attention. Yeah, it's tough. And it's funny because today so many films, I guess, like Oppenheimer, I don't know how long Barbie is, but and the new Martin Scorsese film, they're like 3 hours long or 2.5 hours long. And that is just too much
for me to sit
in a theater.
No, I feel like it's going to get to a point where we're going to have 4 hour film and it's going to be like intermission. You're just going to have it. You're going to have to put it in there. You know how I think, what was it? Was it back in the day where they had intermission?
For big movies. Yes, definitely.
I feel like this is what's going to happen. Like you're going to have to the director's going to be like, but I want to put out my vision. And it's like your vision, you need to put that 4 hours to 2 hours. And he's like, no, it has to be 4 hours. It's like, yeah, I definitely need an intermission. Or, you know, now it's like, you know, what do they do? Like part one, part two and stuff. So you come back later to see the rest. It's like, come on now.
I went to the Castro Theater by myself and I saw The Irishman.
Uh-huh.
And I bought a brownie and a little cup of coffee. Each were like $5. And I asked the guy, concessions guy, said, hey, what do you think of it? And he goes, it's great. And I go, well, Martin Scorsese, yeah, I assume that. But that was a long go. That's a slow-paced film.
Okay.
And it was like 3.5 hours. And I think I got a headache at some point. Just because you're physically somewhere sitting for almost 4 hours. Or it was definitely 3 hours plus. And I hate to say this, but that movie works better on TV where you can see it in sections.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely a theater guy. I absolutely love seeing movies on the big screen, but beyond 3 hours or 2.5, it's too much. You need a break.
It is. Now I say the one movie that should never have been 3 hours or 30 minutes, even though watching this movie, it felt like it was very short but a lot of information, but you know, it's 3 hours and 30 minutes. And this is a Star Wars film. And this was Rise of Skywalker. I don't know if you've seen this.
Yeah.
That was too much information for just 3 hours and 30 minutes, which I'm surprised I will say, but it was too much information. I felt like they crammed 4 or 5 movies into 3 hours and 30 minutes because there was just constantly things happening after thing after thing after thing after thing where I felt like if I left to use the bathroom, I would have missed like a whole plot. Right. Like a whole.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Of course. I think I left. I used the restroom when I saw The Irishman, and I didn't miss anything.
Okay, that's good.
Long and slow. But Star Wars can throw a lot of stuff at you. I was just thinking about, I was taking a shower today before I did the podcast with you, and I was thinking, I think Star Wars has lost their way. And like, what makes Star Wars compelling, or what made the original stories compelling, is because it was one Luke, and his dad was Darth Vader.
Yep.
And it was father and son, and
it was simple.
And it was it was a tree that you could follow. And to follow someone like Boba Fett, you're like, Boba Fett's the greatest character, is cool. He is? Yeah, he's a cool character. He looks cool. But do I need a whole series? Like, what's the
No, you don't.
Yeah, what's the stakes? Like with Star Wars, you had the father, the son and father and the Empire, and there was a lot of heavy such a lot of I can't think of the word, but it just, those pieces felt important. But when you get to these side characters that someone maybe have written in the outer, maybe a comic book or the animated cartoon, that those characters don't seem significant, you know, and the backstories I'm not really interested in. And also they killed Darth Maul in the movie very dramatically. And then he comes back and you're like, okay. And what I was thinking about in the shower was that means Star Wars is always about the villain, such a having a great protagonist, and to make it work for, I guess the magic in any movie is you need to have a villain to make the hero's journey work or dramatic. How good is the villain versus the hero is kind of the formula. If you bring back, I mean, Darth Maul was an excellent villain in that film, and he died very dramatically. And then he just comes back because some writer liked him a lot. No, my point was this. That means you aren't writing new characters. Just like this is kind of our theme, is that no, you have to come up with your own villain, because that is the formula that makes the film compelling.
Exactly.
And so that's your assignment. I know it's difficult. We got Darth Vader. We got these different characters. But your job is the people who create the new Star Wars. You need a villain equal to the hero to make it the hero's journey worth taking. You can't cheat and bring back previous villains. Yeah.
It's too much. They're going to resurrect even more villains back from the dead. And to be honest, I mean, in a sense, Darth Vader is somewhat back because of Obi-Wan, you know, series. Like, even though it's set before, but we're still seeing, you know, new Darth Vader's scenes.
Like, you keep going back. Yeah, so it feels like very much like what we're talking about with AI, where AI can only can't create anything new, can only grab stuff. And so these franchises only have so many villains. Because they're done. If you're bringing back your villains, I think you got to end it. And that's why I have no interest. I mean, I love filmmaking, and Star Wars is a great universe, and I love seeing ships. And also, I think people forget that with Lucas, a lot of it is a montage of colors and images, not necessarily characters. I mean, there's characters. All that stuff is what makes it what it is. But following these minor characters, there's no for me, there's no interest. I don't know, and it's no thank you. So
you know, I just thought of something right now, which I didn't think. But you watched Futurama, right? I don't know if I ever told you this. But, you know, Futurama, they had this picture of, like, say, like a frog or something. And it was, like, doing something psychedelic or, you know, something weird. But it was just an image.
I don't remember the frog character, but remind me.
It was like they were watching.
That sounds funny. I want to see it. I'm looking it up now.
Yeah, they were watching TV, and like on it is, you know, this frog and stuff. Just, you know, Futurama frog TV. And it's just there staring and just going rom, 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 whatever stuff.
But was that a later episode or?
Probably a later episode or something, but it was like an image and stuff. And they were, it wasn't moving or nothing and stuff. But it was just an image. And like they would watch it or whatever and stuff like that or something. And the thing is, I had a dream where it was something like that, but it was like a, it was an image on the screen or whatever. But everyone's in a theater and stuff, and they were watching it. But, you know, I was like, you know, my thing is like, yeah, my thing was like, why are you watching the image? I don't understand. But then later on, I had another dream where I knew this for a fact, like pretty much like, you know how you have your eyeballs and stuff and say mm-hmm. like there's a layer of say, you know, say contact, but that contact is within that contact is like technology of a screen and able to produce, you know, content, you know, or video you can access, like as in, instead of looking at, you know, a TV, you could just look at it, you know, on your, like Google Glasses, you know, you could.
So you, yeah. So you dream it and it can be rendered kind of thing.
Yeah. Or something. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm thinking is with that place I went to or whatever, this dream where they were facing a screen and it just had an image, it made me click in my mind like, wait a minute, because you said something and it clicked in my mind where I'm like, what if they have that thing in their eye, and in order to like say, you know, I want to watch this type of movie or something, that they'll be able to, like, they can't view it like outside of the theater or something, but they have right. to come in to view it.
Sure.
To get that experience or something.
Technology.
You know,
yeah.
I was like, because I was always confused, like, why is people looking at this still image? But then it could be, you know, the company, you know, company logo, and then like you can only view it when you step in this room because you need
Because they have the technology or it's 3D or whatever.
Yeah.
You have to actually go somewhere to experience it. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was so weird where I was looking at it, and I mean, and it had like a screen at like, it was on my eyes and I could see it, but you could also see like your, you know, your living room or stuff, but you still see the screen. So you're just, it was like very like realistic and stuff, but that was just me. So this is just me and stuff.
No. Did you see the demo was a year ago or 6 months ago for the Apple Vision or Apple goggles?
No.
So,
oh wait, you know what? You said Apple. Yeah, yeah, I think I saw it, but it still looks kind of ridiculous. I mean, this.
Well, yeah. Well, what they're presenting, I mean, I won't go into that much, but like you put on the goggles and it says you can make your television as big as you want in your living room because it's just a projected image.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that,
yeah,
you know, if you're single living alone, that's phenomenal. And then you can look at your desktop and it's 3D and you can do your work and people can, as you're watching a movie, people can appear and you can talk to them. So there's a lot of things that are very, it's very powerful and it's pretty spectacular. But if you live with someone else, it's going to be highly irritating.
Yeah.
You know, and how do you share it? Because it's like you're watching YouTube by yourself with these Google goggles. And I guess there's something where when someone enters your vision, they dim so you can see your eyes and you can interact with them, but mm-hmm. you're kind of entering this VR bubble.
Yeah.
And that's very much for one person. You know, if you have a family or a roommate or a wife or whatever, they're going to be like, would you take that fucking thing? I mean, like,
well, yeah,
get them off, you know?
Yeah.
It's very singular.
But I believe that it's sooner or later with that dream I have, like it's going to get to that point where it's going to, they're going to make it, they'll find a way where it can be just contacts and you just put in your, you know, eyes and
yes,
you just have it there. And like, it'll be like, you know, it'll have Wi-Fi connection, of course, but you know, sometimes like you want that a Wi-Fi connection radiation really close up to your eyes.
No, I think what you're saying is, oh, well, it's funny you mentioned your eyes because uh-huh. They say like the goggles, and maybe they all do this, all VRs, they're monitoring your eyes where they're looking. for the tracking. And I forgot why they can do it, but that's part of the technology. So I can
imagine, there's always going to be some catch.
Yes. For the marketing, like, oh, are you looking at the ad or what part of the ad you're looking at? Yeah. Or depending, I think it's not just that. I think it depends on where you're looking, what becomes prominent, you know?
Yeah.
So you get a letter or a bill as you're watching Star Wars 30 on your giant screen. And then, you know, your mom calls you and you get a call and you're getting looking at your mail, and it's looking at where your eyes are looking to make those things more present. Yeah. So, I mean, I love technology, but also it sounds kind of horrific sci-fi where you're going to be sitting on your couch and in an empty room, but you turn on your goggles and you can also it's immersive. You can make it 360. So they have this kind of, you know, these backgrounds, these mountain ranges where you can sit there. And, but you can't do like with, if you have two roommates or you're by, it's, I don't know how you can all sync up. So it's a weird
Wi-Fi connection.
Maybe so, but it's also very meant for the single person, you know, like you playing, you know, it's like you're playing a video game by yourself or watching a movie by yourself. So, we'll see if that goes, because it's like self-driving cars where there's tons of money put behind it. And with the goggles, they put tons of money, and I don't think it's rolled out now. I think it's 2024 when all this stuff is going to kind of come out with the Apple stuff and I'm sure Google or whoever else. So we'll see how that changes people looking at media as well. And it seems like with you, sometimes I feel like you're saying, well, eventually they're going to tap into your imagination. So it's almost like it'd be like you're just seeing your own dreams projected. So I don't know. It's going to be a crazy, crazy future.
I don't think as in like imagine, like tap into imagination and stuff like that. I don't think that as of yet or something. I mean, not that. It's just more of getting technology, you know, closer to you, you know.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, because I don't know about the whole, unless they try to, because I know they're still trying to study like brains and like what makes, you know, things, you know, movement and stuff. So they'll still figure out, like, say, if someone's feeling happy and then they record that with the brain and they know what, you know, certain things, like they're doing this and stuff. But, you know, I think with technology, it's going to get closer and closer to us and, you know, radiation.
Well, there's the downside. Yeah. And being immobile and sitting there. So it's crazy. Yeah. We'll see what happens in 2024. As far as how we get entertainment,
In
our face, you know,
I feel like 2024, I don't think things are going to be like, you know, I think things are just still trying to get back on track, but I would roughly say after, not this Olympics, but the next Olympics, things are going to come back where things are just going to start going rampant. Not this Olympics. What was this Olympics? It's 2024. Is this in Paris or in?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah. I have to look it up. Yeah.
But the Olympics next for 2028, I feel like things are going to start kicking up, you know, as in like, all right, it's time to, you know, start doing this and stuff. And, you know, this is a goal we're trying to hit now.
Right.
Yeah. But other than that, I mean, is there anything else you want to talk about? I mean, you went to Monsterpalooza, right? How was that?
I did. It was Monsterpalooza, you know, it's kind of a smaller version of WonderCon in Burbank and Pasadena, where you get to meet actors and people are wearing monster costumes. And it's kind of LA's Halloween, which I've gone to for 10 years. And I've met actresses and actors from Night of the Living Dead and from, you know, all sorts of movies. But it's got to the point now where with COVID, everyone's staying home.
Yeah.
But when people do go out, they overwhelm whatever the event is. I guess either sporting events or WonderCon or Monsterpalooza is packed. So, you know, people go from doing nothing or they go to any event that they like. And I think, Monsterpalooza has become a thing to do, which is fine, but it's just as a guy who likes to go, it is just, it's so, I can't even stop to talk to people at tables or say hi to people because there's just so many people there and the lines are long and waiting for stuff. So I'm a little over it right now. So many people I think can ruin any any event. And I think, you know, when these things started back in maybe in the 40s or 50s, where it'd just be a couple tables and some comic books and some sci-fi books, you know, probably too boring to go to then. But now it's become these very impacted events. And they're raising the prices. Now they're offering almost like, I guess, a Comic-Con VIP prices for Monsterpalooza to go in early, like an hour early, and not wait in lines. Mm-hmm. And so before, I think it was $40 or $50. Now it's $100. And things are becoming like too expensive. I think some Star Trek events are like that, where it's very expensive to get in for you to meet the cast, and things become just so out of reach. You shouldn't be spending $500 to get a meeting with William Shatner and get his autograph or whatever. it's a little,
I mean, it's 95.
Yeah, it's just too, like, it's insane where people's priorities, you know, but people do love these franchises, and I do too, but it's almost, I don't know, it's a little, it's like, it's too much fandom, you know. Go out and, you know, play guitar or draw or do your own stuff rather than invest, you know, thousands of dollars in going, traveling to a convention to get someone's autograph. That's all. I'm just saying people should be creative and not just fans all the time.
Yeah. Oh man, now I know what you're talking about. I don't know if we're definitely not in that time right now of, you know, people being not, you know, not creative. I think we're in that time of just not creative. It's just everyone's just fanny over everything and bringing stuff back. So
yeah,
it'll be a while for new content, new things and stuff.
Yes. But I think the thing is if you love comic books or sci-fi movies or whatever, superheroes, do your own stuff. You know, as awkward or weird as that sounds, just do your own. And it's more rewarding and more exciting to do because there can be only so many Batmans and so many Supermans.
You know,
that it just gets to be a little, you know, it's a little done. It's a little played out. You know, so.
Oh, it's very played out. They should have been done. I mean, if you look at their, like, if they were, okay, so if they were like actual people, you know, they would have been dead by the 50s or 60s or.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would have been gone. And then let's say, you know, the 70s with the Marvel. So the 70s to, let's say what, well, they'll be dead or, you know, cause they're at the 70, they start at their age, you know, we're talking about like actually whatever their age, like they're supposed to be like 40 or, you know, like, you know, or 42 or, you know, 30. So that's like in the 70s. So they'll be done in the 90s. So what group do we have right now?
No, exactly. And that's one thing I'm not a huge fan of comic books. I mean, I enjoy it to a certain extent, but I do like the superheroes. And so I'm like, well, how old is the Hulk or whatever? And like, it was written in 1967. So he's 30. I don't understand. And then people say, no, you didn't know there was a big conversion or something happened.
Oh, that's just lazy writing. Just yes. They have to keep the character alive and stuff. So they have to think of something like this big old war in the world became something else, and now they are
they shift it somehow. They do this some galactic timeline where someone can continuously be a 30-year-old Hulk or whatever. I'm like, huh, I'm confused by that. Come up with new characters. And people do, they get a little religious about the superhero characters, you know, and they are, I do like them. Who doesn't like Superman or Spider-Man? Those are great characters. But sometimes there's no sense of humor or reverence. It's like people are really invested.
Oh yes.
In these characters. And
they are,
I don't know, maybe try some other, a book or some other material. But I understand from their perspective in Hollywood, they're just like, hey, people like this. And every 5 years we have a new Spider-Man and there's a new audience. So I get it. But but eventually you get kind of just worn out of the whole thing, man.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I really appreciate you doing this podcast again. It was great having you on here, film guy now.
Yeah, no, same back with you. I appreciate you having me on your show. It's always, I love your podcast, and it's a pleasure to talk media technology with you anytime.
Yeah, definitely. So next time, you know, whenever that be, we'll talk about something something else, something that's, you know, grinding our gears. But excellent. Other than that, thank you for listening to this podcast. Make sure to, you know, make sure to follow us on, you know, Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher, some other podcasts, Google Podcasts, if that's still a thing, Apple Podcasts, we're definitely on there. Another podcast that I don't know of, but we appear to be on there. All right. Thank you. And bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night. Thank you.